Welcome to Nerds Amalgamated, a podcast that covers the latest events in science, pop culture, and gaming.
I'm the professor, aspiring game developer, sci-fi aficionado, and completely and undeniably a geek trying to take over the world. I'll be breaking down news from tech to gaming.
I am the DJ, a humble nerd, a big weeb, and a watcher from the halls of the multiverse. Just kidding. Anyways, I'll be breaking down all things comics to movies to anime.
Join us and stay hydrated as we quench you with witty banter, unintentionally hilarious hot takes, and trivia more fun than a night at the pub, courtesy of Nerds Amalgamated.
And welcome to another episode of Nerds Amalgamated. I am the DJ, and with me today I have the Professor.
Hello.
And we have and before I introduce our lovely guest, I want to say we interrupt your regular broadcasting to introduce you to Carissa Graham, creator of Worthy Chaos Comics and writer of the Worthy Chaos Chronicles, and is currently finishing her Kickstarter. And about 110 minutes to go.
Yes, on issue 9. Yeah. But we have issue 10 starting April 29th.
That is a very monumental achievement you've got there. I mean, I'm looking at the how much you pledged and how much it's raised. I'm amazed.
I started about a year ago. I have one every other month. So this is issue 9, but there are actually we're working on inking issue 15, so we're actually very far ahead.
How many have you done?
So there's these 9, and then 13 just got lettered yesterday, so 14 is in the middle of getting colored, and 15 is in the middle of being inked.
I've read the first two, and I've got to say it's nice. It's a really nice nice story you've got there. I know it's the first two, but I got me in, like the gore. the gore got me in nicely. Yeah, I was like, holy smokes, what have you done there?
Like the second page is like the most gorex one. but yeah, so
yeah, that caught me a bit off guard.
Yeah. You know, I have
there was
a huge
the warning, range. But then I was expecting a little bit of plot before we got to the gore.
No, I threw in the gore first and then I worked on the plot. You know, the series is actually already written. There's technically 108 already written, but there's 43 for series 1, and series 2 is 30. And we're in the middle of writing series 3. But what a lot of people don't realize about the story is that the two main characters are written by two different people.
Really?
So I write Serafina, and my co-writer, Jessica, writes Draven. So all of Draven's thoughts and everything, that's all her. And then we take turns with the other characters. But it gives them that unique personality, and you can tell who's who because my character talks nonstop and barely thinks, and her character barely talks and thinks all the time. So there are definitely two different characters there. What happened is we wrote this as role players. We didn't actually have the intention to ever release it ever. It wasn't until we finished series 1 and I was editing it and I was like, there's 5 books here. You know, it has an ending, and this is a really, really good story. It's kind of a bit of a waste. So we thought we should do something with it, and well, here we are. So
nice. So yeah. What was that moment where you went, okay, this is going to be an interesting comic book if I ever have the chance to write this?
Well, it was kind of funny because we knew we couldn't really release it as a novel because the way it's written with two people, it's, you know, you can't really read it that way. It's written weird. So I said, well, I'll just print it for us through Lulu's, you know, there's a site that you could just print your own novel. And I was like, I'll print us each a copy and we'll have, you know, let's celebrate writing, you know, series one. And I'll just find an artist to do like the cover and then we can have our own copies. And we was like, okay. So I kept going through these artists and I was like, you know, they're all kind of cartoony. Do you want realistic or do you want cartoony? And she's like, oh, we could do cartoony. And like a light bulb went off. And I was like, well, if you don't mind cartoony, could probably try to do a comic book. And that's what I said, the infamous words, how hard can it be? And yeah, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. So.
Yeah. I love that. It's like, how hard can it be? And it just went.
It was the dumbest words I've ever. The only other dumb, it's so funny because the joke in my house is with my husband, where a long time ago, like 6-7 years ago, when we first got married, he wanted a full-on Thanksgiving with a full-on turkey. And he's like, how hard can it be? And it has been like the joke ever since. It's like, you do it. You try to do a turkey. So for me to say it just made it double funny. Because I'm like, well, how hard can it be? And then, yeah. I should have known right then and there that was a big mistake. I mean, I'll tell you, the first two artists I got, I lost like $9,000 on. So, So right off the bat, it was a little tricky and I almost didn't continue, but we're so obsessed with the story that we just had to keep looking. So I actually had the hardest time finding an artist that made our characters the way they were in our heads. You know, I don't know how they couldn't see what we saw, but you know. You know, we found some good artists that were great and they did really good characters, but they looked nothing the way we pictured them. And the first person we found that lost, you know, stole $3,000 from us and we tried to fix it for $2,000. They did okay. You know, we liked it, the sketch, and we were like, all right, but became for the comic book, it wasn't as good. It didn't really look like our character, but we went with it because we had been searching for so long. So when we found the new Jonas DaCosta is our new artist, and he had never worked in a comic book before at all. Like he had never been paid to do a comic book. So he was he was very eager, and he's like, I was so mad at this point when I posted in Facebook. I was like, here's my chapter. If anyone's interested in doing a test page, if you're hired, you know, it'll be like 40 issues, you know? So I had like 5 people working on pages, and he comes in, he's like, you taking submissions? I did not like his art at all. It was so ironically realistic. Because I didn't know he did portraits. That was his job. He did portraits. And I was like, I don't know. That's too realistic, man. I was like, listen, I'll make a deal with you. You can do a free test page too. And I'll look at it first. Or you can wait till those 5 are done. And then I'll pay you for a page. He's like, no, I'll do it for free. 24 hours later, it was inked. It was penciled, inked, colored, and lettered. 6 panels.
Wow.
And the characters looked identical to what we pictured. I was like, I have to ask my co-writer, but you're hired. It was like, I knew right away that she was going to look for him. And now he's been stuck with us for 15 issues. So he's, I'll have to say, we butt heads and nobody hold us against him. It was all me. I don't know what the fuck I was doing. He didn't know what he was doing. So he was just like, so I'd never written a script before. And I didn't understand when he did a script that he likes to show like action. So I'd give him like, you know, 6 to 8 panels, and he would add panels to it, and it made everything too small. And we kept butting heads for the entire freaking issue. And my husband's yelling at me, you need a new artist. I was like, no, he's the artist. He's the only one that can do it. I was like, I have to make this work. And it wasn't until I realized that I had to scale back my panels to 4, and then he can do 8 if he wants. So that's what I did, and it worked perfectly, and we've been like in sync ever since. But yeah, it was weird to try to do it. We would not mesh, and I was like, I gotta make this work. He does it so perfectly. So yeah, but he's super fast. And
yeah, that was impressive. 24 hours. That's impressive.
Yeah, he does. Oh, he's so fast. And he had quit. I was so stressed. He quit his job the second issue. He's like, I'm gonna dedicate myself to this. I was like, well, shit. Are you sure? I was like, I don't know where this is gonna go. But he quit it, and now so I had to. I kept felt like I had to keep, you know, do, keep it up, and fortunately it's worked out so far. But yeah, he's fast. He could do a whole issue, which is like 28 to 32 pages in 1 month inked. So
wow,
that's crazy. So I like it. My wallet doesn't.
So. So yeah. So with the writer, so you had the writing, you had the artist. Now comes the fun part, was just trying to market it, and that must have been another tale in itself.
I still don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, it's crazy. Last year was my first year doing it. I did 155 planned podcasts, and that's pretty much the only way I get it out there. Like, I don't really advertise. I just started this year playing with Facebook, trying to get the algorithms up and playing with that, so that helped a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's not easy to get your story out there. And I see so many other indie creators that have been doing this for 7 years get half as much as I do. And then I feel bad. I'm just like, I don't, you know, why are they getting so much less? But I also have a ton of merch. Like they call me the queen of merch because
Your Kickstarter. I went to your Kickstarter the other day and I saw the merch. I was like, holy, that's a lot of merch. You've got the comic books. You've got the Anubis necklace. You have the Anubis plushie. I was like, holy. And you got the statue. I was like, that's insane. That's really cool that you got all this merch out there really quickly.
Yeah, it's a lot of merch. Well, I used to get made fun of a lot from other creators that have been doing this, of course, a long time. And they made fun of me for the longest time. And then, like, a couple of months ago, they've been doing it for, like, 7 years. A couple of months ago, they started asking me where I get my plushies made and where did I get the hardcover printed? So I'm supposed to be the rookie in the group, but they're all copying what I'm doing. So yeah, I get made fun of a lot, but yeah, they copy me.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a couple of them that have copied. They have plushies now. There's like at least 9 people that copied my plushies.
Fair enough. So okay, back to your comics. So with the characters Seraphina and Draven. So how did you come up with so? Was it your idea with the character design, or was it the artist idea?
The characters were kind of based off of actors that we had originally liked, because we were role players, so we had like the actors in mind. But we couldn't tell them that because for the original artist, we told them that, and they made it look too much like the actor, and I didn't want to get sued. So I couldn't tell him that. I was just like, oh, this is how we pictured it, and he has medium hair, and she's got longer hair, and she's paler than him, and he's a little bit tanner. He has brown he has blue eyes, and she has brown eyes. And that was pretty much all we told him. And that was it. He did it exactly. So
Yeah. As I said, I was reading the comics and I saw the dialogue exchange, and I like how Draven is like, okay, I must be dreaming in this. This must be a dream. And Seraphina's like, hey, you are my Draven. All of a sudden, and I like the back and forth they were going with it, and how I don't want to spoil too much of it, but when they had at the end of the first issue, it was like, okay, I gotta save her.
We always thought that was funny. So when we originally started as role players, we had just talked about this like 4 seconds ago. I originally had the idea that they had fallen in love when they were teenagers, and then they got separated, thought each other was dead for 10 years, and met up again. Now, I told her that she's going to love Draven, but you're not required to have him love her back. It could be unrequited. So that's your choice. I was like, you can choose whatever you want to do. So when we started out writing, it wasn't definite that Draven would fall for her or that he did really love her. So that's why you get to see that bond, you know, kind of growing. But yeah, she's like, she even said it as a writer. She knew that they belonged together. So it's just kind of that bond that they have. And we started off, like, we wrote for one day before I gave her this role where I was like, do you want to write this role? I've had this role in my head for like, 11 years at that point. Do you want to write it? And then she went and made, you know, the character her own. I had told her like literal nothing. I didn't even have a name. I just said, he's an assassin and, that's about it. I was like, they met as teenagers. That was it originally. And then we kind of built from there. She named him and we both loved the name because it's from, you know, the Crow, Eric Draven. And, I took the name Serafina for his. We Googled like bad boy names. You know, it's like what's a demon boy name? And for her, we just searched, you know, angelic names. But I chose Serafina because I can call her Sierra for short. But then it became a joke where nobody else can say it. Like, it wasn't intentional. It was just all of a sudden, it was like, nobody else can call her Sierra but Draven. And you only read one and two. I think she did it once. She did it to the angel.
Yes.
First one. But you'll see, like, it doesn't matter if they're in the middle of being tortured. He will correct whoever calls her Sierra. And he gets made fun of it. Like, I think in issue 12, he corrects the people that have them at gunpoint. You know, and they're like, don't you get tired of saying that? And he's like, nope. And there's like one time in like, we have like 13 books. So it was like book 12. And he's like being trapped by demons and he can't talk because he's trapped and he's yelling something and they can't hear him. And so they let him talk. And he goes, it's Serafina, because they had accidentally called her Sierra. So that's like the motif that he can't stand anyone calling her Sierra. So it became a joke. But it's just so funny because I literally picked that name to call her Sierra. So. Yeah.
Okay. The fun part I liked, and with the Serafina and Draven, because you said I was gonna ask you this when you talked about, now that you mentioned the Crow, have you seen the Crow trailer, the reboot? Oh no, the reboot, no, the remake.
So no. I will tell you, you know, James O'Barr does. Now I liked the Crow when I had it as a comic first. I love the original movie. It was Brandon Lee's legacy. There is no reason to make that. I watched it the other day and it still holds up. There's no reason to. Even the soundtrack is amazing. There's nothing to redo in that movie. So they redid it, but I don't know if you guys know the comic books at all. There is a Crow that's tattooed like that, but it's not Eric Draven. So they a random Crow and just, you know, turned it into Eric Draven, which makes no sense. So why would you remake it, follow none of the rules?
Two words, modern audiences.
Yeah, well, you pissed off, you know, a lot of Gen Xers and we're not gonna millennials. Yeah, the elder millennials and the Gen Xers, we're not gonna take it. We're not gonna let that fly. So yeah, we're all boycotting it. If they had just made it another Crow movie, because the Crow could be anyone, you know, they brought back the sequels had different Crows. If they had just done one that was better than those, because I heard those suck. But if they just made it another character and just, you know, follow the rules, people wouldn't be so, we probably still hate it, but we wouldn't be so uptight about it.
That's fair. And that's the interesting part, because your comic, it's not like, it's not for the faint-hearted. Like, it's real full-on. Like, even with the gore and the whole, like, with the gore and the setting and stuff, like, it's not for, like, the faint-hearted.
Yeah, no. So I heard it was bad. I haven't seen the trailer, but I did see the photos of him. So I saw like the nipple tattoo, whatever they're talking about. He looks just like Leto or whatever.
Yep.
I don't know why they did that. He said he didn't follow the comic book, so how is it a remake? Like, if you're not going to follow the comic book, why would you bother calling it a remake? That makes no sense.
I know. So with your comic book, so you've got it to, so you, right now you have 9, you said you were up to 15. How long is the end game going to be?
So obviously depends how popular it is. I'm at least doing 22, because 14 to 22 is my favorite. You're not supposed to have favorites. It's my favorite. So so the whole thing started, I started writing because I fell in love with the game Resident Evil 2. So I role Claire, I don't know if you know the game, but I role played as Claire Redfield for 15 years. So I was obsessed with the game. So 14 through 22 is very Resident Evil 2-esque. You know, they're in a town, in a city full of zombies, and they come up with survivors, and they're trying to get out, and all this, and there's, you know, all this stuff. So that's my favorite. So either way, those are getting made no matter what. But I'm hoping to do at least series 143. That's my goal. That's my goal. If it's popular enough, I'd love to do the 30 issues in series 2. But I at least my first goal is the 43 to try to get series, because it has a really, really, really good ending. If I add the epilogue for series 2, it's not as happy an ending. I am hoping to do that. But yeah, the goal right now is 43. That's the goal. So we'll
see. Nice. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
So with the comics and with the writing process, do you and your fellow writer, do you ever have a fork in the road moment? Let's say, for example, you want to kill off a certain character, but the other writer goes, no, I want to keep the damn writer. And you go, yeah. And you go like, I'm struggling with this fork in the road.
We've never had that. The only time I know we had a slight, but not really disagreement, because we're really on the same page for the story. She wanted to be more mean to our characters, and I was like, I think we already tortured them enough on this section. So that was it. It had been something like they had gone to hell. So later on, they both went through something, and they got separated, and then we got them back together, and she wanted to separate them again. I was like, we just got them back together. You have to give them, like, some breathing room, and that was the only time that we were... But other than that, no, we pretty much discuss... some ideas, and then I literally just sit down and write. I don't even know what I'm going to write when I'm writing it. So I just sit down, I write, and then hope that something, you know, coherent comes out. And, usually it does. And so I'll sit down and when I first started writing as a role player, I can only write one liners because I'm dyslexic. So it was very hard for me to write. Now I sit down, I could do 3,000 words, and one sit down. So.
Ooh, that's impressive.
Got a little better. Yeah. The other day, I think I did 6,000 words. So, I definitely got a little better.
Nice.
Yeah. We're still writing. We're in the book 1 through 5 is series 1, and then there's book 6, 7, 8, 9 is the series 2, and so we're up to book 13. So we're 3 books into series 3, and there's definitely going to be at least one other series with writing. I don't know if it'll ever be released, but with writing, because there's going to be a whole war between my two characters joining up with Anubis and the Egyptian. I think Anubis has the mummies and other Egyptian gods, and with Hecate and Hades has the zombies. So it's mummies and zombies, and then they're going to be against heaven and hell and Celtic religion, and they're going to all, it's going to be an all-out war. So I don't know if it's going to be an all-out war for one book or if it's going to be an all-out war for a whole series. So right now I have no idea. But series 3 is definitely 5 books, because they find something that they need for each one. So I'm not sure how that's going to be yet. So we don't really think ahead. We just kind of write. So we'll see when we get to it, I guess.
So what's your style of writing when it comes to writing up the characters and what their roles are and stuff? And like, how's it set out essentially?
So when we first started, we knew pretty much what characters we were going to have. It was going to be Seraphina and Draven. And then we had Kemiel, which in scripture is the angel of true love. So he was their guardian angel in their last life. They have different lives, you know. They always reincarnate, but they never have memories of it. So he was their guardian the last life, and he screwed up pretty badly. So you find out about that later, but yeah, he screwed up pretty badly. And then you have their fathers, you know, Ayazma and Remnal, her father. You know, and both of them are after the angelic weapon that Serafina was made out of. She was created from this weapon. And if either one of them can get this weapon, they can tip the scales of heaven and hell in their favor. However, it requires Serafina's soul to activate it. And if they use her soul, then she can no longer reincarnate with Draven. So those characters were the first ones we created. And then Seth Davies and Lucas, that's her brother, they came into play. And then for book three, which is 14 through, well, actually 13 through 22, we created two survivors because we wanted to make Draven jealous. We love jealous Draven. We think he's hysterical. He just pretty much wants to punch the guy out every 5 seconds. So he's why he came into play. And so we pretty much kept with those, and we would add, you know, one or two characters as we go. But yeah, we'll suddenly get an idea. Like, we're working on book 12, and they travel to the underworld. So I was kind of like, ooh, what characters can I put in here? So pretty much the main characters stay the same. We just add more enemies as we go. So that's way more fun.
So over the years, so you've done this for multiple issues. What's the biggest lessons you've learned in your journey from starting out till now?
So when I first, I love this story. When I first decided to hire an artist, I was going to bed that day after I hired them, and I said to my co-writer, I don't know how to write a script. So she's like, oh, you'll figure it out. So I watched a 10-minute video the next day, and I wrote a script. And when I handed it to a letter or sent it to a letter, they're like, did you want to see any of the art, or did you just want dialogue in every panel? And I was like, oh, right. So my script one became three scripts, as I had to spread it all out because I don't like to take out any of the stuff we wrote. So yeah, So my first script was three scripts. So that was quick. I learned that. and I've learned that you know, when you're writing a novel or whatever, you can just say there's scissors on the, you know, the table next to you. But when you're in a comic book, you have to go back and add it to four pages ago. When they walked into the room, you've got to be like, there's scissors on the stair, you know, scissors here or something. So you have to plan ahead, which we never had to do. The other thing I'll have to say, in a novel, we can torture them, bruise them, you bloody them up. And you don't have to remember what injuries they have. But when you're writing a comic book and your artist has no memory whatsoever, you limit the wounds they get because they have to remember where they all are. So in book two, which we're now issue nine, at the end of issue nine, she has to change her clothes, and she winds up picking for in issue 10, she picks a nurse outfit because that's the only choice she had. And I got, someone made fun of me, like, oh, that's a really sexy choice. I was like, that's not why it happened. She had an injury in 8, and my artist kept forgetting the injury. So we had to keep going back and redoing the injury. So finally I was like, screw it, I'll just have her get a new shirt, and then we'll hide it. But then I was like, they're in a haunted asylum. What shirt would be there? Like, she can't. It was driving me crazy. So I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to put her in a nurse outfit. And yeah, so now she's been stuck in a nurse outfit for like 10 issues.
A nurse outfit in the haunted house. What could go wrong?
Yeah. It was actually kind of funny because it, like I said, it wasn't planned. It didn't happen in the novel because I didn't have to worry about that. But she's wearing this outfit, and she has the hat. And Draven's like, okay, why the hat? And she's like, it completes the outfit. But you know, my artist kept forgetting the hat. So that was fun. And we had to keep going back, and he actually still forgets the hat. We're in issue 15. I was like, oh, you forgot the hat in this panel, and you have to go back and put it on the cover. And he's like, damn it, that stupid hat. I was like, well, yeah. So good times.
I bet you must have. I bet you there'll be like a running gag in the Simpsons, like a Simpsons couch gag in the Simpsons. It's got your fucking hat. There's a hat. There's a hat.
Man, stupid freaking hat. And I thought he was going to yell at me because we decided to add, I don't know if you know Leon Kennedy from Resident Evil 4, he has this gun strapped to him. And yeah. We wanted to add that to Draven because not only is it sexy, it's, you know, like an homage to Leon because that was, you know, our favorite character. So I told him yesterday, I was like, we're going to add this strap to it. So I think it'll look better. And all I'm thinking is you're never going to remember this. We're going to have to remind you over and over again. So that'll be fun to try to remind him. But yeah, we'll do our best. I mean, but we forget things too. Like, he forgot the ponytail on the new chick has a ponytail and he kept forgetting. I was like, you're putting her in a bun. You know, she have to do her hair. How are you forgetting to put it as a ponytail? But yeah, so that's the one thing we have to make sure. He kept forgetting the fangs on our vampire chameleon bat. So fortunately my colorist is a saint and adds all the things he forgets. So it works out so good. I even said to him, I says, like, how are the fangs? He goes, he remembered this time. I was like, bonus. So yeah. That's what happens when you're super fast, you know? Yeah.
So all the characters, all of the artwork and stuff. So, what's your when you try and do all the comic book stuff? What's your biggest inspiration from all for all this?
Supernatural.
Hey.
Yeah, I love Supernatural, the show. I was obsessed with it. I'm still obsessed with it. And one of the things that inspired the main plot of the Angelic Weapon was when Castiel had to hide the Angelic Weapons. And for some reason that sparked whatever was in my head. I don't remember what my thought process was. I just remembered this Angelic Weapon that I created, and then it just snowballed from there. So, yes, Supernatural is a huge part of it. That's why we had vampires in the 4th through 6th issues, what we called them, clotters. But we had a lot of things. So yeah, it's very inspired. The angels and the demons are very inspired by Supernatural. So I didn't think of this when I wrote it because a lot of people say, oh, it's very Buffy.
I tend to disagree on that because when I see the dialogue, it kind of felt like Sarah reminds me of Dean.
Yeah, exactly.
And Sarah reminds me of Dean, and Draven reminds me of Sam.
Yeah.
There's
a funny story about that. No. It's funny that you say that because we did a cover homage to this Supernatural on issue 4. It's a poster that they were. Dean stands in the front and Sam stands in the back. So we copied it, but we put Draven where Dean was, and then Serafina is where Sam was. So when I went to go get Sam, you know, Jared's autograph, I was going to joke to him and say, "You, Serafina, the girl is in your place." But he was so excited that he thought Draven was him, probably because of the long hair. And he's like, yeah. "Look how buff I am! I can't wait to tell my wife how buff I am." and he signs over Draven. So when I go see Jensen in December, I'm going to tell him that, just so you know, you have to sign above Jared, and you just so you know, he signed your role. He's the girl. Technically Serafina is very Dean. She's very sarcastic and
she had, like, I was like, wow, she really likes to say a lot of stuff in the end. I was like, damn.
Yeah, she's very sarcastic like I am. One of my favorite pages is when she's like, why don't you put your hand through the fence, you know? And he's like, no thanks. And then he's like, how come the ghosts don't go over the fence? And she's like, shh, don't give them any ideas. And he's like, really?
I saw that. I just went, ha.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite things between them. Yeah.
I've seen a couple of episodes of Supernatural as well when I was young, and I followed the journey from time to time. Okay, I wanted to ask you, what was your favorite arc in Supernatural?
My favorite, I don't know, I hated the whole drinking the blood, demon blood thing. That wasn't my favorite arc. But I will say my favorite episode of all time is French Mistake. I think it's hysterical. So it's this episode where they go through a portal and they wind up as their human selves as the actors. So you have Sam and Dean in supposedly Jared and Jensen's bodies. And so they don't, they're like, oh, I'm in some guy's name, Jared. He's something Padalecki. And he's like, what does that mean? He goes, I have no idea. And then they think they see Castiel. So they go over to talking to him and they're kind of obviously going off script. And he's like, what are you doing, guys? This isn't on the pages. Are you trying to jinx me? Are you trying to, you know, prank me? And then he's talking like Misha and they're like, damn it, this isn't Castiel. This is his human part. And he goes, oh, you guys got me. J squared. It's just so freaking hysterical. If you haven't seen it, it's like season 6. It's one of the funniest episodes ever. And they cracked me up and he's like, you know, they're taking off his makeup and he's like, what is on me? She's like, it's makeup. He's like, you painted me like a whore. Like, it was just so funny. He's like, they put makeup on me. And it just cracks me up.
I gotta rewatch it now to see. Have a laugh.
French mistake. And it's so funny because they go to Jared's house and like there's pictures of Jared's everywhere and his real wife is there who was Ruby. And he's like, you married fake Ruby. And it was just so funny. Because they used the real wedding photo because they got really married. So it's just, it cracked me up. And then they're like buying stuff and they're like using up credit cards and like, hey, it's pretty nice being Jared and all this. Oh, it's just, yeah, you got to go back and watch it. It's just really funny.
Oh, that's actually, okay. Were you a fan of the spin-offs by any chance with the, when the Supernatural series ended and they decided to do the Winchesters? And I think there was one with the how the cult was made as well, if I recall.
I did not see the Winchesters, no, but I watched the ending because Bobby and Jensen were in it. Is there another one with the cult? I don't know that one.
I've heard there was one. There was one called the Winchesters. Hang on a second.
Yeah.
Then there was another There was another spinoff, but I
know they're trying to start it up again. Did you know that? They talked about it in December when we were there for Christmas at one of the cons. And I thought they were there just saying that, like, whatever. But then they just showed pictures of them trying to convince CW to let them do another season. So it's mostly Jensen. Jensen has missed it more than anyone, which is so funny because he actually has a very good career. You know, he's in The Boys and he's in a new show, and for them to spark up, you know, season 16 of Supernatural, it's just really funny that he wants to, but I think he misses it. Like, he always loved it. And Jared from literal day one said, I don't want to be doing this for 5 years. so in his defense,
So with the cult series, so basically they said during production of Supernatural's third season, Kripke stated that the writers sometimes discussed the possibility of a prequel series set in the Old West. A spin-off would follow Samuel Colt and a group of hunters. So they're thinking about it.
I love Westerns. That's another, that would be my second favorite episode is when they went back in the West. And back to, you know, Wild West. And Dean had like a shirt that says, I love posse. And he thought it was hysterical. this is going to really out me. But when I originally got married, I got divorced like a year later. So obviously it was a mistake. But when I first got married, I was miserable. And during the wedding, the photographer could not get me to smile. So that should have been a red flag then. They had me, they said, just picture Jensen in his cowboy hat. And that did it. So so that is literally how the pictures were taken. Scary.
Oh, man. So wait, well, you got any questions, Professor, or you're all good? I think
the one thing we haven't covered so far is we've talked a lot about what goes on, but we haven't sort of introduced the comic. So what's it about?
So it's Serafina, an angel descendant, and Draven, who's a demon descendant, and they're soulmates, and they get reincarnated into this life with no memory. and they are being chased by their angelic father and demon father as they are after the angelic weapon that she was created from. They want this angelic weapon so that they can use it against the war between heaven and hell. Her father wants it for another reason, but he's not letting anyone know. If for people while they're reading it, they'll notice they never actually see their fathers. The fathers are pulling the strings. They send Anubis after them. He sends hellhounds and ghosts and everything. The only problem is that she can only be killed in a certain ritualistic way so that they can capture her soul, which will activate the weapon. So that's pretty much a horror survival. That's pretty much the goal, or Romeo and Juliet in hell, if you want to be simplified. It's them trying to protect each other, and they get kind of annoyed at each other because they want to protect the other more than anything. And doing so, they each get hurt trying to protect the other one. So it's kind of funny to see them battle it out, like who's going to protect the other one more. It's a story of, you know, what are the lengths you would go for the person that means the most for you? And like, what would you do for them? How far would you go for them? So it's a survival horror, but you know, deep down it's a love story. And there's a lot of intricate lore to it that a lot of people don't know about yet. You know, there's a lot to it. There's a whole prequel to it and all this stuff. So, it's an action packed. If you like action, you'll like it. If you don't like action, you will not like this. It is like nonstop action. It's, there's still character development, but they're always on the run from something. I mean, now they're in the haunted asylum. They're trapped in there. So issues 1-7, they're trapped in like a Silent Hill town where they meet up and they get trapped in there and it's merging with hell. So you have these ghosts coming up, you have the hellhounds coming up. And then they get trapped into a haunted asylum, which is where we are now in these issues. And they get chased by zombie mental patients and ghosts and giant salamander monsters that are homage to the Lickers from Resident Evil, which I could not stand. I hated those freaking things. And cursing. If you don't like cursing, you won't like the story. My mom's review was, I finally read your story, and besides all the F words, it was pretty good. Thanks, Mom. So gore, cursing, and action. Those. If you like those, you will like the story.
Ah, okay.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I've been meaning to ask you. So when you made this comic, what were the biggest myths that you've encountered when you created this, when you were creating this comic? Throughout the entire journey,
like myths, like in the real production of it. I would say one of the biggest myths is that you'll just find an artist and, you know, start. Like I did not think that it would be that hard to find an artist, and I will tell anyone the advice I have them: if you're going to search for an artist, never ask for a character design. It's the dumbest thing to ask for. And I did it. That's all I asked for until like the last one. And then I found someone. But what happened is, if you ask for character design, it's twice the cost of a page. But if you had a page from your script, they literally have to do the character as you describe it. So you already have the design. So you'd pay like double the price for this character design. And then you don't even know if they can do it in a sequential manner. So it really was pointless to do character design. So I wasted thousands of dollars with doing all that. Yeah, it was not good. I did not think it would be so hard to market and get it out there. I thought, you put it on Kickstarter and everyone goes and buys it. But that is not how it works. So I didn't really have any myths in place because I really had no knowledge whatsoever. I jumped in like a complete moron. I had no idea. But I did not think it would be so hard to make and to get it out there. I did not realize the cost of a comic takes, you know, it costs $3,000 to $6,000 to make an issue. So,
kick in the teeth.
Yeah. And that does not include merch and printing and all that stuff. The overall expense is just astronomical. That's a big word for me. I'm dyslexic, but that is a huge thing. And that I did not, that and covers, figuring out covers. I knew that there was variant covers, but I never would have imagined the cost of these covers. One of my covers is $900 that I paid for. I'm hoping that it brings in, it's actually next issue is, I did not picture the cost for these when I got into it. I thought it would be like, you know, I don't know, $1,000, $2,000. Little did I know, you know, how much it would cost. So I would say the biggest thing is the cost of it. And I got lucky because my artist, you know, he's very much in love with the story. He believes in the story. He loves the characters. And he gives me an amazing deal where he charges everyone like 3 times more. So I'm very lucky I got him, you know, on the cutting room floor, you know, the very beginning, ground level. So that's a big thing. I will tell anyone that is searching for an artist, don't write them off because they're new. Like, you can see how my artist, how his art just progresses amazingly. It goes from, you know, I always thought it was good. Like, I thought issue 1 and 2 were great, but it just gets so much better as it goes. He started school to enhance this, and it shows that the more techniques he learns and all that stuff. So I really got lucky when I got him. So, but yeah. Right. Yeah, the cost is amazing. Amazingly high. Yeah.
About your comic, there was one thing I wanted to ask you. So, with your comic, so you said I like how when you're describing your dad's, like, you made your dad sound like absolute dicks.
Yeah, they're assholes. Yeah, they really are. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. There's 3 major villains in the first series. There's their fathers, which is 2 of them. And there's a human, Davies, which is awful. Nobody knows how bad he is until later, but it winds up that the human's worse than the angel and the demon. But yeah, the angel's an asshole too. I mean, they're pure and simple. Yeah, they're dicks. They are. And I kind of got that, you know, kind of from Supernatural too, where they're like, angels are dicks, you know. We all have this illusion that angels are, you know, these amazingly nice creatures. But if you really, if you read scripture on them, they're not the nicest people or creatures on the planet. So yeah.
Let's see your current status of your Kickstarter. A second, I think it must be over by now.
1 hour to go.
Hey, 1 hour to go. Wow. So that being said, so do you have any upcoming projects after the current Kickstarter besides the what you were saying with the next few chapters? Or haven't said you got any other ideas?
I think this one has all of my money and thought process in it. This is probably the only project. Like, I've been asked to write on other projects, but my mind is always on this one. So I always decline any other writing options. I don't think I'm a very good writer. I think I'm an amazing storyteller. And I got really lucky in that my ability to tell stories is converted extremely well to comics. I didn't ever think of making comics would be something that I would do, but now that I'm doing it, it feels like it was meant to be. And that just the way I write was perfectly for comics. But yeah, this wasn't a planned thing, so I just got lucky that it's doing as well as it is. So.
Okay. I've also wanted to ask you, like, I've also noticed one more thing, with the name Worthy Chaos. So how did that came up?
So Worthy Chaos, we suck at names. But I am the one that came up with Worthy Chaos because, he always says, so she always feels like a burden because her angelic blood attracts everything negative. You know, everything negative is always after her. So they get chased and knocked down. And obviously she's the reason why the angels and the demons are after them. So she always apologizes to him for everything. He always says, "You're worth it." So after we wrote it, I could not think of what to call it. But for some reason, I kept thinking that she was worth it. So she's the worthy chaos. She causes everything. She's chaotic, but she's always worth it. So to Draven, she's the worthy chaos.
Ah, nice, nice, nice. All right, we've got some fun questions for you, Carissa. All right, favorite curse word?
I use shit a lot. I never use, and I don't know why. I don't think it's respect for my mother, but I never use mofo or the whole word. I never say it or write it. I find it very insulting, which is funny because I've never shown my mom any shred of respect ever. But for some reason, I never use that term. So yeah.
All right. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I would love to. I don't know, something I could do. I would love to animate my comic.
Ooh.
Yeah. I would love to learn animation and animate it. I think it would be, everyone's like, "Oh, what kind of movie would you want?" I don't want it to be a movie. I want a rated R for violent animated series. I think it would be phenomenal. It reminds me of a mix of Inuyasha and Fushigi Yugi, those two together. And I think it would be animated.
Nice,
so if I was,
nice.
Yeah, animation. Bring it on.
All right. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You can stay. Yeah, yeah. That's it.
What are you not very good at?
Shutting up. I am not good at. I don't have audible silence. It's very awkward when I go to my co-writer's house because she does not talk at all. And I always think, don't I just talk too much for you? She's like, one of us has to talk. So fair enough. So yeah. Yeah. I'm, and you know, it's funny because, my friend just told me last week, she goes, you know, I think you're ADHD or however you say it, 'cause I'm dyslexic and usually they go hand in hand. And I was like, and it's like, what would you do? Heads and there's psych, you know, therapists is like, you know, I think it's working for me. So I'm just gonna work on that, keep it going. So yeah. Yeah, hyperfixating and talking.
Fair enough. Invisibility or super strength?
Can I choose to be invisible and come back? Like it's like my choice, or am I invisible for the rest of my life?
Choose to be invisible.
Okay, invisible.
Okay,
but
cool.
I would prefer teleportation because I would love to travel and not have to travel. So invisibility, but I would have been upset that I didn't get, you know, teleported.
Fair enough. Cape or no cape?
Well, I've seen Incredibles, so I have to no cape. So we're gonna go with no cape.
All right. Leon Kennedy or Chris Redfield?
Leon Kennedy. He's my boy.
Okay, Ada Wong or Jill Valentine?
Jill?
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, interesting. Yeah. All right. Who would you hate being chased? Mr. X, Lady Dimitrescu, or Nemesis?
I hate Mr. X so effing much. Like, with a passion. And he's so sexist because he only goes after Claire until the remake. So we're going to go with Mr. X because screw him.
Oh, okay. All right.
Have you seen the mod that replaces the music with X going to give it to you?
No. No, I have not. But it sounds
whenever he comes up on screen, it's just X going to give it to you.
I'm going to have to look that up because that sounds funny.
Interestingly, speaking of Resident Evil, I saw the other day someone made the Naked Gun intro to Resident Evil with Leslie Nielsen.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look that up.
I'll post it up on the... I'll post it up and you'll have a laugh. You'll have a fun laugh.
Awesome.
Okay. In one sentence, how would you sum up the internet?
How would I solve it?
No, sum up the internet. Like,
oh, sum up. I would say it's the your best friend and the greatest enemy of all time.
Hey.
I'm a Gen Xer, so I think life was way better before it. However, I would not have, you know, what I have now without it. So I still think MySpace is better. You're talking to a girl that had to run and find the encyclopedia when she wanted to look thing up. Who has dyslexia and could not spell the thing she wanted to look up? So I do appreciate Google. If I can pronounce the word, I can get it spelled. So I think it's definitely an amazing enemy and a useful tool all at once.
Okay,
it's also the downfall of all of society, but you know, besides that.
Okay, favorite Wikipedia article.
I go to that thing nonstop. That's a tough one. What's the I guess I looked up, I go to the Supernatural all the time to look up like the tidbits and the did you know little facts. So I like the little facts at the end, or it's not the word I'm thinking. Oh, trivia, the trivia facts.
Okay. What fictional character is amazing in their book / movie / show, but would be insufferable if you had to deal them in mundane everyday situations?
Oh, that's a good one. You didn't tell me that thinking would be required on the show. let's see. Who would I think would be insufferable? Do you know The Sword of Truth? The Seeker. It was a show, Legend of the Seeker.
Vaguely.
There was this wizard that followed him around. I would kill him. Like, he was just stupid and overly annoying. I think that would drive me crazy. Or if you ever watch Bones, which I love the show Bones, but the way she talks is exhausting.
I think
I would be exhausted hearing her talk. It would just require too many brain cells to figure out what she's trying to say. So since Bones is more, no, we're gonna go with Bones. Just too smart for my brain level. So.
And also, what would some fairy tales be like if they took place in the present or modern, including modern technology and culture?
If you had the big bad wolf trying to knock down the houses, you would have the like alarms go off, or you know, guns. The pigs would have guns to shoot at the big bad wolf, or. They would just call the cops to come, or tranquilizers. I could see. I think we should modernize the stories from back in the day. You know, Cinderella. You know, he finds Cinderella by looking up her on social media instead of going from town to town.
There's already one. I think it's called Tinderella. I remember that one.
Really? There you go. I can totally see that happening. Yeah, take the fun out of it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I think our hour is up. What do you reckon, Professor?
Yeah, I think we've covered pretty much everything.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Carissa.
Yeah, thanks. And I will say, if anyone wants to find our Kickstarter, just search Worthy Chaos. There's links everywhere, but literally we're always live or in pre-launch. So if you search Worthy Chaos, we're the only thing that pops up. Granted, there's like 10 of us, but there's all ours. So you could find us. That's the best way to find us.
And we'll make sure we have the links in our show notes as well.
Where can they find us, Professor?
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or Nerdy Bits on YouTube.
And we'll find and any other audio platforms. So that's all we have for this week. Stay happy, stay nerdy, and see you guys.
Look after yourselves and stay hydrated.
Here we go!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.